Hi everyone, my name is Mel Hogan, and I'm a critical media studies scholar based in Canada. I'm working on a project called The Data Fix through a series of conversations with scholars, thinkers, and feelers. And together we explore the significance of living in a world of data, and especially the growing trend of digital humans in the form of chatbots, holograms, deepfakes, AI images and videos, and even tech that revives the dead. The conversations are minimally edited and serve as an archive of the collective thinking and feeling that is going into the DataFix project. Please see thedatafix.net for more details and show notes. Thank you so much for listening.
My name is Olivia Snow. I am a research fellow at UCLA's Center for Critical Internet Inquiry, where I study sex work, tech, and policy. I'm also a dominatrix, which is what really led me to my work. I focus mainly on shadow banning and cross-platform surveillance, and I am based in New York City.
Thank you so much for, you know, agreeing to do this. It's a rather new sort of concept series, so you had to just kind of trust that this was going to be okay. I didn't know that we had other connections, but I was really wanting to talk to you in part because of the piece that was just appeared in Wired. I just thought it brought something really sort of new to the conversation, and I'm not sure who will be listening to this, so I'm wondering if we should just introduce what that piece was about, the technology in there, and I'll let you sort of take over, and I'll jump in. But there are kind of like all these new sort of AI projects that come out every once in a while. And so you jumped on to this one because I think you were able to get some pretty incredible insights out of it. So I'll hand it over to you just to talk about that piece a little bit.
So last weekend I got that app Lensa that we've been seeing all over social media. And, you know, I think like a lot of people, I just like found, you know, some random pictures, fed it to the thing, waited 20 minutes for it to spit avatars back out. And, you know, I think also like most people, I thought they were like really pretty. Like they look pretty cool. I also saw a lot of sex workers using it, especially sex workers who aren't face out, because it was like a semi-safe way to sort of show our faces. So I just chose these random pictures. So I was like, I'm going to try it again with like my hot picture. So I went through, found 20 of my favorites, put it back in. And I was appalled when they came back. They were, rather than the first batch, the second was so hypersexual. It like was really shocking, and it felt really violating to see a bunch of like AI generated nudes of myself that I didn't want. Like I don't even take nudes, period, because like, you know, I get like stalked a lot. I don't need that shit all over the internet. So I was like, I think I tweeted something like, I want to run a few experiments, send me money, and like a few simps, send me money. And I ran a few more, you know, first I got like dungeon pictures, then I ran them through the male gender option. Then when I tried, so it's female, male, and other are the options it gives you in the app, and I tried other with just, I think, like pretty feminine photos, and they came back really young looking. It's like they desexualized me in degendering me or ungendering me. And they were really kind of upsetting to look at because I looked like a teenager in them. And these were my adult photos. I woke up on Monday morning and I saw those. I was on my way to work on the subway and was like, you know, I'm going to try this with my actual child photos. And I don't have very many because like I was an ugly as shit kid. I was so unattractive. It's unbelievable. I was just hideous looking until I was like 17. I don't have many pictures, like period, just because who want that shit. But I was able to get the 10 I needed to run the app. And as I feared, they came back quite sexualized. And you know, at which point I pitch Wired and wrote this piece. So I discussed how these apps are, I mean, they're dangerous. They steal your data. Well, they don't steal it. We give it to them. They, like, you know, all things I know, they've stolen from artists. But, you know, I also consider myself in a unique position in that I have been the target of a lot of harassment campaigns just by dint of being a very mouthy sex worker. And, you know, I understand that I, more than I think a lot of others, that I do not any longer have any like ownership or rights to my own likeness. I've seen my face fed into meme generators, not by me. I've seen pictures of myself that I'd never even seen before that people found by like stalking my estranged parents' social media. Like, I've seen my partner has been doxxed on multiple occasions. So, you know, I was like, putting this into this app is not going to, you know, this is information that the thing might already have. And this is such a disturbing, upsetting experiment that I'm doing that I don't think I would have, I certainly wouldn't have thought to do, but I wouldn't be able to do if I hadn't already been so like viciously dehumanized on the internet. It was kind of like, okay, I've seen so much worse than like child porn of myself. Come on.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
It's interesting in a way to take, so if I'm hearing this correctly, is it's almost like you knew, you could really, you know, from your expertise, from your lived experience, you knew sort of where this was going, like where these technologies, where these AI go, and you kind of pushed it to its absurd kind of violent limits in some ways, kind of in anticipation of what it would eventually do anyway. And it's really interesting because in the piece you talk about, you know, the dangers that we're more sort of aware of, which is, you know, I have a piece up here, but it basically it says that, you know, we're basically teaching and training the AI with whatever we input. It also, we've been hearing a lot of critiques from visual artists in particular saying, you know, this is drawing from our artwork and that's problematic because there's no way to compensate for that work. And it sort of like displaces artists. And then also that, you know, the terms of service and the basically the data sharing practices are predatory. And so we've identified all of these problems. And then what you did was sort of say, okay, I think we've like, people are writing about this, people are thinking about this, but I think what you're identifying, and it's a bit, you know, Ruha Benjamin, Sophia Noble, all of these folks who have alerted us a little bit to the, you know, racist, misogynist sort of tendencies of these models based on the data sets that they draw from, which are a reflection of us, I guess, collectively in some sense. And so I'm really fascinated by you taking it upon yourself to push. I mean, there's kind of a risk in this experiment. It's certainly very vulnerable. So I'm wondering what kind of insights did it give you? Did it just confirm for you that these are violent technologies?
In a way, yeah. Oh, excuse me. Now I'm coughing. in a way, yeah. And, you know, actually your thread on Loeb is what also kind of what gave me the idea of it, in that it like, because I hadn't heard of Loeb until I saw your thread. And that Loeb creates like the most heinous, violent images of like the darkest recesses of our like psyches. It just, you know, has them writ large in these images that Loeb generates. And Lenta, I think, does the same thing, just from a different direction.
Oh, very interesting. So just in case people don't know what Loeb is, I mean, you can Google it, but essentially, and I wasn't sure even as I was seeing Loeb, if it was, again, sort of a conceptual affirmation of the violence embedded in these systems, right? I wasn't sure if it was a real proof of concept or kind of a reflection on what we know to be true. It's still,
it's,
I don't know if you have any thoughts on
fascinating.
That.
Fascinating. Yeah. It is so fascinating.
Yeah. And basically what it spits out, I don't know, maybe you'd be better at describing it, but it's sort of like these kind of, I don't know, something we might associate a little bit with horror, like a kind of like really sort of misogynic kind of, you know, misogynist horror that is doll-like and accentuates sort of trauma, if that's possible, through,
yes,
right? I don't know. Okay,
yeah,
right, there's something,
yeah,
about,
oh, and did, yeah, you see I put Loeb through Lensa?
No, so I knew I saw the prompt. I saw that you were going to do this. So tell me about that. Tell me about that.
Well, so I mean, it also created sexual imagery, but it was violent sexual imagery. Like the breasts, it didn't have nipples really. It had what looked like it used to be nipples that got chopped off. One of them especially just had like large, red, bloody, gaping wounds where nipples would be. It was pretty horrifying.
Yeah, so there's something about these technologies that do something with, like earlier you said it sort of like can desexualize or like over sexualize. And this was I've heard other folks talk about you said about that other option, which I mean I can't imagine the kind of like body dysmorphia and body dysphoria that like cr creates, in addition to that sexualization, there's a kind of like gender violence embedded in even the
Right, yeah.
options that are provided.
I was
So I'm
kind of shocked by the
fascinated.
options when I saw them the first time, especially like male, female. I'm like, what year is it? Like, who? Okay.
I
all
agree. I
right.
agree. That's a
Yeah.
flag there. And then the other is sort of this token gesture towards like, ugh, those whatever everyone's complaining about, essentially, right?
Advice,
Like just
yeah.
like, yeah. So that, so I'm sort of like fascinated by, that everyone, in a way, it's so obvious that it would like hypersexualize women in particular. And on the other hand, what I've noticed with like, chat GPT, and those other technologies, they haven't dealt with misogyny or racism, but they have made it inaccessible to the user. So basically, there are topics that are just kind of like outside of like what you can, I don't know, generate text about. So they've done this like kind of walling off of misogyny and racism in particular. It doesn't seem like Lensa has done that. In fact, it's still in some ways accentuating. I don't know if you have any thoughts on like the. Because I think ultimately capitalism and like the possibility to exploit this in particular ways is the end product. And I know for, a lot of people have identified that actually the misogyny and the racism is quite lucrative. But I wonder if you can reflect on Lensa or even like something like, the arguments made through Loeb. Like what is sort of the intended end for these things?
Oh, that's such a good question that I'm not. So, honestly, I think the end of something like Lensa is to refine facial recognition technologies to then sell as products to the state.
Okay, so the sexualization or even desexualization is just like a distraction in some ways, and
Well,
then
I think
there,
it's
yeah.
like a side effect, kind of. Like I'm thinking of in the opening to Safiya's book, she talks about Googling black girls, right? And in something like hotblackpussy.com was the first result. So, that wasn't intentional, but on Google's part, that wasn't, that's just a reflection of what people on the internet are looking for and wanting to see, which, is racist and sexist and disgusting, but it is that's what our culture is. Our culture is racist and sexist and disgusting. So I think that while, Lensa and, hold on, this, my back is starting to hurt having to hold this dog. I struggle to imagine that the actual goal of Lensa was just to create like these pretty pictures. Like it has to be more sinister than that, right? Like, I mean, for in part because I cannot imagine adult like software engineers being that naive to think like this will be fine. Well, but like people have been saying this for years. But I think that it's kind of an unintended consequence of taking in these images. And I also, and I tried to allude to in the article, or no, maybe this was a tweet thread I wrote, but the AI is developing based on user submitted content. And, like I noticed with my like childhood photos, we don't keep unattractive photos of ourselves. Like, why would we? We don't want any pictures of ourselves where we don't think we look good. And like, despite, knowing better, I a lot of us really subscribe to Western beauty standards, myself included. Like, so, of course, the user submitted content is going to be those that most so like align with Western beauty standards. So, you know, if a bunch of like photos that like accentuate large breasts or, you know, high cheekbones, blue eyes, whatever, get submitted, then the AI is going to train itself on that and be like, oh, okay. So we need to, you know, focus on this, hone in on this. And even like, it's not seeing faces and bodies, it's seeing patterns of light, but still, you know, when we have, but it's identifying those patterns, recreating them, is my hypothesis.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, because in some ways it's like drawing from, you know, very self-selected sample, which people tend to put their, you know, their best face forward. And then it perpetuates, you know, generally sort of very sort of white, slim, et cetera, notions of beauty that everyone is sort of run in and through those kind of standards and filters. And so you know, it's very interesting because this is happening through these images and people are, I guess, opting in to participate, though I'm not sure it's with full understanding of the consequences all the time. Do you see, so, because part of the project I'm interested in is that splintering sort of from reality, right? So at this point, we have a good sense of who we are and how we represent ourselves, though we're sort of on this cusp. And so I'm wondering sort of two questions. One would be, you know, if you can sort of look better in and through these services, do you anticipate, and this is a little bit speculative, but like a way in which this might replace our sort of identity, is there sort of a point of no return? Because I have heard, you know, this was before Lensa, but like people would have surgeries to match what they looked like on filters, I think it's Snapchat, etc. So there are sort of like real life material consequences to this. And then, yeah, I guess I don't know if you want to respond to that. I have a couple more questions in that realm, but
I guess I don't think it will be anything new. I think it will accelerate what we're already seeing.
And, okay, so you know, it's just
And I think, like, I've noticed, especially with homophobia and I'm sure we've all noticed homophobia and transphobia and anti-Semitism, in particular, have just so rapidly, just exploded in ways that I personally haven't seen since the early 2000s, but really was not expecting, because we have this idea that progress is linear, which it isn't. So my thinking is, you know, we already hypersexualize women as a culture. We sexualize children as a culture. And now we're, you know, going to do it more and harder and faster. So
yeah, that's really interesting, sort of, because we've definitely seen the rise of, like, you know, sort of terrorist attacks on drag bars, especially in the US, but where I am in Alberta, there's certainly the same sort of sentiment, the anti-LGBTQ. So,
I was holding hands with my partner a few months ago and got, I think we were in Vegas, and got like very overt glares from strangers. And I'm like, I'm pretty like conventionally stereotypically feminine. She is as well. So it was like, I haven't seen that level of open hatred.
Interesting. You know? And so are you sensing, sort of a connection between the, like, something that's happening in this realm of representation of, like, distortion of, I don't know if it's gender and sexuality or a hyper resexualization of images on the internet, and this anti sort of queer.
Level of violence that it is just surprising to see, because, you know, we all know that people are homophobic and transphobic and whatever, but they usually have the manners, you know, to like keep that hidden from the general public.
Yeah. There's been more like permission, definitely, to be hateful. We're seeing that in and through the pandemic seems to have exacerbated that as well.
Yes. I'm thinking that, you know, that also people are afraid and going to want to pass better, especially trans folks. And I think that these apps also could kind of facilitate that flying under the radar just to avoid violence.
Oh, that's so interesting. So it could, for some folks, sort of confirm a way of looking for a particular purpose, right? Because do we need to be sort of authentic, like, do we need authentic representation of ourselves? Are we not always in some ways like manufactured, right? And so this would be like a step extra. And I think it's really interesting in the realm of sex work and for trans folks in particular, because those are two really specific examples where it serves as a kind of protective layer. So maybe what we're identifying here is that these apps don't function as intended, but they also don't function the same way for all people. And so we're identifying misogyny, racism, and then we're identifying also ways in which presenting yourself like in ways that are more, I don't know, safe, palatable to like the public can also.
Right. You know, this makes me, I was talking to my therapist yesterday and I said something like, because, you know, I get doxxed constantly. And I said something like, I wish I could just get rid of my government name. And she was like, well, could you just legally change your name to Olivia Snow? And it was a really weird kind of identity crisis that I had like in that moment. Cause I'm like, I present myself as Olivia Snow. That is the name I write under. That is the name I'm employed under. It's like that's who I am. But I'm also not. I'm also this other person who like who's also the same person. Like it's really difficult to parse, I guess.
That's really interesting because like I think what you're showing like in a really explicit way is that like this idea that we have like an identity that we are somehow like that it's important to maintain it, that we have like chosen it in any capacity, or that there aren't instances or reasons for having multiple simultaneous identities. Because there's this real sort of push for, you know, having your real name, I think on Facebook or real, like these quote unquote real accounts with real names. And like, maybe that is not actually reflected. Like that serves a different purpose than the kind of ways in which we live, right? Whether that's about gender or the kind of work that we do. So I think your example is perfect for saying, well, I'm maintaining two identities. I don't know if those identities look the same, if they have different sort of like facades, they serve different purposes. It sounds like they do. But it sounds like, yeah, it's really,
I mean, honestly, yeah. I just have different makeup styles. Those are the differences. Aside from that.
Yeah, but it sounds like they're also very important. They're really important for you. And like in this project, sort of what I'm researching is like this kind of obsession we have with like generating tons of data from humans, like through, you know, the facial recognition, this kind of sentiment analysis, like a lot of things that have been debunked, but it doesn't matter. Like that impulse remains, like I would say, grows even stronger. So we extract data from humans, you know, for like almost like in every format, in every sense. But then there's also like this way in which we want to recreate humans using that data as though that makes sense, you know, as though there's like some sort of end to that. And I don't know if it's a eugenics project by like a kind of different name in a data form, but there seems to be something in even in your example of Lenzo where there's like a very particular aesthetic that's emerging. From that is not by accident. And so I think like I'm just fascinated by these technologies, the ways in which we're like, you know, these data sets are massive. Like they are like, you know, we needed the internet to be on for like these 40 years to create enough data to then recreate this kind of human and digital form or this digital human. And I guess I'm trying to wonder what it's for, what it's trying to replace, what is it at the service of, what kind of things is it fulfilling? Like, you know, like I know that there are AI kind of servants like Alexa and other
sort of
like
I think it's kind of almost like a trafficking project. And I think if we think of all like, you know, historical violence, the Holocaust aside, it's typically to extract labor or capital or both, and creating these technologies that can reproduce that labor for free, or what we think is for free, is what I imagine the goal is. And, you know, like, again, I don't know if the goal is like, well, at some point, like, does the goal even matter? You know, I was like, whenever I ask these like why questions, I'm like, okay, well, what's 7 minus yellow? It doesn't fucking matter. Like we have to deal with the consequences anyway. But, you know, is this to like make life easier? and, you know, just make life easier? Or is the actual goal, the violence, is the cruelty the point? Is it to create these technologies that we can then exploit on purpose? Like, people like hurting people. Humans are sadomasochistic. Like, is that what, which I mean, I think we could see with Loeb too. Is that, like, the actual intent? Because it's certainly going to be one of many consequences.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's kind of like the this project of liberation. So we were going to create technologies to give us more leisure time. That was like one more utopic, maybe more sort of Marxist like take on it, right? It's like we can have these technologies because humans are not machines. And in fact, if we could replace the labor, then we could live, I don't know, maybe more sustainably.
Well, you know what's funny?
Yeah.
I wrote
yeah.
about some of this in my dissertation, which was in an entirely different field. But we grant so much more humanity to machines than we do to actual humans. Like, if your car breaks down, you're not like, you lazy bitch, at your car, you know, you just go get it fixed. If, you know, the refrigerator breaks, you're like, oh, well, it's old, I'll get a new, you know, we don't give ascribe some kind of moral failing to machinery. But when humans need a minute, then it's because we're lazy or uninspired or stupid or whatever. Like,
and yet, don't you think that the more we humanize machines, the more abusive we will be towards them?
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So there's something really interesting where there is a respect for like the car and the fridge because we don't see ourselves in it. But I think the minute your fridge starts talking, the minute your fridge, I don't know, they could program easily some kind of like emotional register into it, right? And your car as
yeah.
well.
No, my, I think it's Safiya actually, has a fridge. I don't know if it talks, but it does have a screen on it. And it is the most horrifying shit whenever I'm like it'll show like the weather and stuff. And I'm like, nah, like, don't tell me the time. I don't need to know the time from you.
Yeah, but I think it's like identifying something very interesting that like the humanizing of machines, and then we are seeing a trend of like making machines have more sort of, you know, more like definitely a voice. And I think increasingly probably programming other types of like things that we can relate to. So I don't know, there's something there, I think, you know, definitely about gender. I don't know if there are other sort of components, but these kind of things that will create new kinds of violences or reinforce particular ways in which we dominate, you know, like we will talk back to our car, we will, you know, I already sometimes yell at the GPS, like, or
I mean,
like,
yeah,
combat,
I guess
right?
I've absolutely called my car a lazy bitch before, like that was a lie when I said I did not.
Yeah, but,
yeah.
yeah. But and so do you think this stuff that we're seeing like with Lensa is like in some ways it feels very sophisticated and very cutting edge and unlike anything we've seen before, and on the other hand I get the sense that this is just the beginning and it's just giving us a little bit of a warning, a hint of what's to come. And I don't know if you have sort of, what should we be sort of, you know, I don't like making predictions, but I do think we should not be so naive as to buy in, like you say, the stated intentions by the people developing. I don't think they always know what the end result
right,
is.
Right.
Yeah. So if you, yeah.
Shit, what was I about to say? So I mean, the technology inherent in Lensa isn't new. It's just more easily accessible now. People have been making deepfakes for ages. You know, people have been impersonating others for ages. This is just, you know, an opportunity for novel ways to commit fraud, really, that have already existed, but, you know, are now just rapidly expanding in just really terrifying ways. You know, I'm waiting for when some kids make revenge porn through Lensa of their teachers.
Oh,
I see that
nightmares.
Happening. Because teachers in particular get targeted. If they're found with OnlyFans, are typically met with termination because, you know, we're assumed to, I guess it's, you know, usually like K-12, but that, you know, any kind of sexuality is dangerous for children. So, you know, I'm wondering how long it'll be until kids start circulating nude photos of their teachers that they've created, and that results in violence against those victims.
Yeah, and like in a super, because like I'm a professor too, and I have anxieties about students just in general. I think there is you know, it's like, I don't think there's a totally always a recognition that you're just a human being in front of a large group of people being assessed from head to toe, you know, right. just kind of repeatedly. Yeah. And that is already sort of anxiety inducing, you know, you get used to it, but like, it's not like fun. Like, you know, it's not fun to be
of like, I mean, it's know, like, yeah. it's dehumanizing in every way, whether they idolize you or demonize you, it's still dehumanization.
Yeah. And I think like, I'm really sort of worried about what you just said about this use of technology that when maybe you're in your, you know, early 20s, you think is sort of without consequence and a little bit funny. But that honestly, and you probably can speak to this, but like once something is set out kind of, you know, on the internet for general consumption, it replicates and it circulates and it's almost impossible to retrieve. Right. And I think that we have a sense of that, you know, well, I think depending on your age and life experience and line of work, et cetera, you might have a greater sense of the consequences of someone just sort of playing a joke, you know, in sort of as an undergrad. And it, like, I wonder sort of like in your line of work, you talked about doxing a little bit, which I'll just explain really quickly, but if this isn't sort of complete explanation, basically my understanding of doxing is that like someone is angry at you, feels owed by you, and then decides to destroy your life generally by releasing personal contact information, addresses. And I think what we're seeing here, and maybe this has already been done, but these technologies like Lensa and others could make it very easy to circulate images as well that are completely out of context. And so there's like an extra sort of layer of worry sort of in and through these technologies. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I'm pretty, there's really little to no information, or there was under my legal name online, because, mm-hmm. you know, I know how, I've always known how this is going to get manipulated. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking like, so with sex workers specifically, when we refer to doxing, it's our government names, because, you know, that puts us at risk of incarceration. And, you know, that is how I always kind of understood doxing to be, just our real names. You know, I noticed when the doxing got really out of hand, I think it was last May is when it really just, that's when someone finally put out my full legal name, and I'm like mad ethnic, so like I'm the only one with my name on the planet. And immediately people were doing things with my face. They found one of my headshots that I think was on like the Women Know History website, and immediately, like from the start, were putting it into meme generators, were photoshopping it onto other women's bodies. I was just seeing my own face in all of these different contexts just proliferating. And then, you know, when there's one of those photos, like in particular, that gets zeroed in on, then that's the one that just gets cartoonishly distorted. And like, I'm thinking of like one in particular. It was like, I think it was the day after I defended my dissertation, and I'm wearing a little hat and like smiling. That has just been, you know, cut out and put into other images, used as other people's Twitter headers. People have made, like trading cards of like my photo. People have made word searches of my government name and research interests, and then like my photo in the, yeah, it's fucking demented.
I feel a bit like, not, I mean, I'm never surprised by the violence that comes from the internet, and but just hearing these sort of very concrete examples,
not just from like 4chaners, this is from tenured professors.
That's an interesting point as well.
They're in their late 40s. I have one who's in her 70s who has circulated this shit. And I mean, I think that I'm a peculiar example and kind of singular in academia, because like I'm not face out as a sex worker, so my face is already kind of like a novelty. But the kind of unchecked whorephobia that a lot of people have, I think, means that I'm kind of like just this black hole for people to project their like deepest fears and like loathing onto. And so circulating my face, it's not that of a human. It's that of this like monstrous, like amorphous kind of
like almost like you deserve idea. Like you deserve whatever sort of jokes or like more like violent outcomes come to you by virtue of sex work, I guess, in some like in some sense. And it's really interesting to say, to be explicit about the fact that, you know, we imagine this to be a bunch of incels or, you know, people right. hanging out on like alt-right sites, but what you're saying is that actually these technologies, because of, and maybe in part because they're, it sounds like you're saying some of these are like, you know, your face transposed onto someone else's body. Maybe they like part of that is evident. And maybe there's some sense in the way in which that's sort of like not a quote unquote real photo that like people feel justified in circulating it. I don't know. Yeah. There's some sort of sense of like, you know, what that line for like breaching someone's like integrity, privacy might be. And people seem to be shifting that line with new sets of rules that are not obvious to us.
Right? Yeah. So, it's, and I'm thinking, you know, it's weird how it gets tied up in language of social justice too, because like as just this, you know, thing that people project onto, you know, I'll get called homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic, racist, sexist. Like, I'll have Christians calling me anti-Semitic. I'll have straight people calling me a homophobe. You know, like, goofy shit like that. So when they find my image and circulate it, then they seem to imagine themselves as participating in some kind of, like, restorative justice, in a way.
Interesting. I think like, does that happen a lot? Like, where they're, like, the problem is sex work. It's not misogyny. It's not everything. The problem is sex work. And so if we can stop one sex worker, then we've done some sort of like reparative work. Is that part of it?
I don't think that they recognize it. I think they legitimately believe that I'm some kind of Klan member.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like I have seen the craziest conspiracy theories about myself. There was a tenured professor I saw creeping my LinkedIn last summer who thought I was a QAnon op. I've seen like long ass threads about how I have relentlessly stalked people I've never heard of. It's just they saw things in my tweets and internalized them and decided that I was talking about them specifically. And, you know, the reason that I say it's whorephobia and about sex work is because I've never ever seen this happen to anyone else. And that is the only variable. Like people don't talk like that about other people, really.
No, it's really interesting. I think you are right, where there's like permission, some sort of like moral like loophole where they're like, this person doesn't deserve any of their privacy or any of their like right to, I don't know, to tweet, even like that there's always something more to it. And so the scrutiny, this kind of like obsession, fixation on the significance of like who you are in relation to the material you circulate is scrutinized in a way that like my tweets certainly are not. Like I've, you know, it's barely any engagement. So
a tweet maybe 2 days ago, someone was like, why are you boosting this racist blah blah blah, and this one woman who had been following me for like years replied and was like, oh, I had no idea Snow is such a racist, I'll unfollow and mute her now. And I'm like, you've been engaging with my shit for how long? And you still just kind of believed that assertion based on exactly zero evidence, because there isn't any. I mean, the only evidence that does exist of my like war crimes is that like stuff that's been, you know, created without my consent. Or fabricated. Yeah. It's really weird.
I think that we're identifying like in this call, and I know that there's violence embedded in these technologies, especially anything that like risks distorting someone's control over their own identity. Like I think that that's what is never acknowledged in these, you know, big tech companies, these social media platforms, is like, you know, even when Elon Musk bought Twitter and everyone's like, dude, that whole site is bots. Like most of your supporters are not actually real people. But I think what we're saying here is like, it doesn't matter. Like there's another layer in which that sort of popularity, the illusion of something is sort of more powerful than the truth. It's more powerful than integrity. There's no due process for, you know, your grievances. It's like you can probably cancel your Twitter account or, I don't know, scrub as much as you can on the internet.
But, I've thought of that too. Like, well, maybe I should just, you know, disappear from online. But even then, if you Google my government name, then you're going to find my dogs. Like that, I have no control over that. You know, I just like need to come to terms with the fact that I do not have any control over that. And, you know, I'm thinking of when there was some nonsense that went down on Twitter that kind of spilled into some like academic orgs offline. And I remember my one friend was talking to a lawyer with an academic organization about it. And the first thing she said was like, listen, facts don't matter. They don't matter. There is, and I think I wrote about this too. There is no amount of exonerating evidence that is sufficient to kind of end these disinformation, misinformation campaigns. None, zero.
Like the court of public opinion or like an accusation in itself taints or anything circulated, even when it's like rectified in some sense, some damage has been done. It's true that the impact of the accusation is tenfold what the sort of truth might be if it comes after the fact. So yeah, I think we've identified a bunch of scary stuff. I'm looking at the time. It's already 40 minutes. I don't know if there's anything I miss because I know there's more to this for sure. And I know there's more even in that Wired piece that I'll link to. But I guess what we're getting at is like that splintering from reality, the lack of control over identity, and then the ways in which there are differential impacts. And so I think it's really interesting to focus in on sex work and sex workers, the impacts on trans folks, and then sort of like, of course, the embedded misogyny and racism that is just like by now sort of standard fare for these apps. But I think it's really interesting to show that these manifest in ways that we can't always anticipate, and that makes them hard to regulate. And I think the perspective,
like with sex workers in particular, like I was talking to Sarah about this, a lot of people get slandered online. It happens mm-hmm. to like really everyone, but sex workers specifically will have their families and loved ones targeted in mm-hmm. ways that others just don't, you know. Like I know one woman who's a porn star who her child, who was like 7, was doxxed and had their face like circulated over the internet because for whatever reason mm-hmm. We just kind of like a glitch in people's brains. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm thinking too, you know, that Marina Abramović like experimental art that she did maybe like 30, 40 years ago, where people just had like knives and like a gun and like flowers and stuff laid out on a table, and it had to end early because because people just went to their most violent impulses. And I think
sort, this is... sort of like just to go through this for anyone listening. So basically, I think she so maybe describe it. Like she was setting up.
Yeah. So she had a table of mm-hmm. all kinds of just items, and then she just, you know, stood there and was like, okay, do whatever. And you know, there were the people, I'm off the top of my head, I don't know how many people were participating in it, but came in and you know, ripped off her clothing, cut her, put a gun to her head, you know, all of these horrifying things that we like, you know, it's kind of like the Stanford prison experiment, right? Mm-hmm. Like all these things that we think that we are, I don't know, above, like we're not. And when given the opportunity, we will kind of descend into these just demonic impulses. Like, and yeah, you know, I think it has been accelerating with the pandemic. People are angry, justifiably, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. taking it out on each other. And then mm-hmm. as this technology at the same time is so rapidly developing, there's going to have to be some type of policy limiting it, or it's going to get real bad, really mm-hmm. fast. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking like Google, which is already like now kind of unusable. Like trying to find actual, like Google worked really well for a while. But now mm-hmm. it's just like, just a trash fire, you know, the way that like SEO has been weaponized, especially. I think like there needs to be some kind of limitations on this, because I'm sure people have already been killed.
And like, the SEO is like the optimization of a search engine. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, that's super interesting. I feel like I can do a whole episode even just on that. Maybe I'll have to try to get Sophia Noble on the podcast. Yeah, this has been really great. And again, the idea here is not to, you know, resolve the world's problems, but just like bring up something, but some things that we're sensing right now in a way to hold us to account, because there's no way we can look back and say we didn't see this coming, right? And I think that that is sometimes the excuse, is like, well, how did we know? How did we know that, like, we would have to manage
Black women
this?
Knew, trans people knew, sex workers
right? I think sex workers and trans folks in trans
and especially the intersections between
and Black women, absolutely, right? Like the
people most dehumanized in the like public imagination, or in the popular imagination.
Yeah, I agree. So we saw it coming. We're all accountable in some ways for how these things you know, manifest. And like, I don't know what the sort of call to action is from here, but like, I think,
And I mean, I think it's interesting too, in that the most dehumanized and demonized people being targeted are also the people most likely not to be listened to and most likely to be silenced, so that we can be, you know, screaming about this. But if no one's going to hear it, then, you know, what are we doing?
Well, also the people who do sort of sound the alarm get fired from Google, et cetera.
Exactly.
So it's really, it's a really tough time to be up against these massive corporations. But yeah, I think an amplification of these voices, I don't know, and especially hitting sort of those affective registers, like getting to the sort of core of identity, you know, that has seen sort of society splinter so much. I think that's like a big project of our time. So yeah, so thank you so much, really.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And you know, I'm gonna edit these down minimally, because the idea is just to archive conversation. And then I will link to this Wired article and maybe the Abramovich art piece if I can find it online. And if there's anything else,
there's like a Wikipedia page for it.
Perfect. And if there's anything else you want me to link to, we can follow up by email. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, lovely to meet you. And thanks again so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. All right. Have a good one.